Hey, witches. Llewellyn has a book out that we wanted to make sure you knew all about. It is called Houseplant Horticulture by Devin Hunter. It talks about infusing magic into every act of indoor plant care. No plant is ever just a houseplant. Whether you're a green witch or merely horticurious, you can learn how to successfully grow potted plants, connect with their spiritual energies, and partner with them for magic. Houseplant Horticulture also includes a foreword by Juliet Diaz, author of Plant Witchery, and illustrations by Ciolo Thompson, creator of the Hedgewick Botanical Oracle. So grab your gardening gloves and save 20% on Houseplant Horticulture by Devin Hunter. Use coupon code HORT20 at Llewellyn.com. The coupon is valid from April 10th through April 30th. It is not valid in conjunction with other discounts or previously placed orders. Note that you do need to be logged into your Llewellyn account for the coupon code to apply. That's HORT20 at Llewellyn.com. Check it out.
The path of the witch is so unique.
The gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual.
She's actually sending me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Bless it be, y'all.
Bless it be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch, and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches. They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit. Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Hey, everybody, welcome to That Witch Life Podcast. I'm your host today. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Hillary, a co-host.
And I'm Kanani, drinking my rosé through a red vine.
Yes, that's right. And that's why your microphone sounds strange, because you're probably 6 feet away from it.
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah, correct.
We are at our fourth TWL.
It was third this morning, and I'm the one that's drinking, so I don't know what's going on with Courtney right now.
It is the third mini-con. I haven't been drinking yet, but the night is young. It is our third mini-con, which is our live virtual gathering. One day this year, we focus completely on the magic of astrology. We had five workshops, one of which was a masterclass with our guest, who is Ivo Dominguez Jr., and he is one of our listener favorites. He was voted by our Patreon community as their favorite guest of 2023, and he was our keynote presenter today. For those of you who are not familiar with Ivo, Ivo Dominguez Jr. has been active in the Wiccan and pagan community since 1978. Ivo is the founding member and former high priest of Keepers of the Holy Chalice, the first assembly of the Sacred Wheel Coven. He currently serves as one of the elders of the 14 ASW covens. Ivo has been published in numerous periodicals and is the author of The Four Elements of the Wise, Keys to Perception, a practical guide to psychic development, practical astrology for witches and pagans, casting sacred space and spirit speak, among other works. He is the anchor author for the new 12-book Witches Sun Sign series. In his mundane life, he has been a computer programmer, the executive director of an AIDS HIV service organization, a bookstore owner, and many other things. He is queer, poly, and lives in the woods of Southern Delaware with his family of choice. Ivo, welcome back to That Witch Life. How are you?
I'm really happy to be here. It's awesome.
We're so excited.
It's good. And you just gave this incredible talk.
It was really amazing.
The chat was on fire. People were so excited. And we just dove in deep about the power of astrology in their witchcraft, but we didn't really talk much about you and what you've been up to recently. From what I've seen on the webs, the portals, you're everywhere, back and forth, up and down, everywhere. What's going on for you these days?
You know, you're supposed to be out and about in the world when books come out.
Yep.
And having basically almost every month of one of the astrology books drops. So I've been trying to be to as many events as possible. So here I am. And the next one, I'm off to going to be in June in Florida for another conference, and then a campout event in June in Wisconsin.
Oh, my.
And then Mystic South in July.
Oh, we're going to be there.
Awesome.
Yes.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we are going to be there. We're really excited. It's the first time. It's the first time I'm going.
Oh, it is such a treat.
Oh,
it
good.
Treat. I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be terrific. Well, all right. Well, so, because you're dropping one book a month. That is the Llewellyn Sunside series. Llewellyn, whom I should say sponsored today's mini con. So we really want to give thanks to Llewellyn Books for sponsoring this event.
We could not do it without Llewellyn.
I am glad they offered support to the community that way.
Oh, yes, they absolutely did.
They have been very supported.
Yes,
so the 12 book sun sign series, one for each zodiac sign that you co-authored with a witch writer of
each sign.
Right. And then, you know, you also collected articles and such. I contributed to Cancer Witch, which was super fun. So tell us a little bit, what is that? How's it been received?
I mean, it's hard to tell because everybody's, you know, one of the downsides to being a gregarious individual that is pretty easy to get along with means people tell me nice things.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say that so far I've been surprised and happy that people that I do not know at all, who don't even recognize my name or the other author's name, are like, it was really useful. It was really concise. It was really insightful. So I'm happy that people are getting something out of it, because honestly, it is part of my, you know, well-known nefarious agenda to try to get us more people involved in magic and witchcraft and astrology, combining all of them together, right? But it was quite an experience, because I had to track down all these writers for the long pieces, the short pieces. I had to write the writing prompts for each of the secondary authors to keep consistency in the whole series. So I'm going to say that the writing part was intense. The negotiating with people was intense. Keeping every book to roughly the same number of words was insane.
It's the worst part. The editing process.
I was actually thinking about that the other day. I was like, that must be so challenging.
Yeah. If each of them could have been their own free thing to be whatever size and shape they needed to be, that's one thing. But if you need consistency across 12 titles, both in style and content and length, it's
a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, but I'm glad. I mean, the last galley proof got turned in. So technically, right now, I'm done with that project and just doing the promotion end of it and the answering questions end of it. But I will at some point write a blog about how the process of steering the 12 books through creation was also a proof of astrology, because the Aries turned in their stuff faster than anybody else. The Geminis asked the most questions. I mean, it was like true to form about how each of the writers behaved. And
Cancers cry the most about it?
Actually, the Cancers were the highest percentage of people that said, no, I don't want to write that because it's too self-revelatory.
Except for me, because I'm an oversharer.
Yeah, but this is who you are. This is your career.
You're
right?
Like, my whole life is public, so whatever.
Libra didn't want to finish until they knew what the book cover looked like and made sure it was bedazzled.
And the Capricorns was like hard to find Capricorns that believed enough of them that were witches and believed in astrology and enough to want to write for the book.
And then they were too critical of themselves to actually finish the piece. And so, you know, that was the challenge.
I will say that one of the problems with that book was the need for the writers to rework their material. You know what I'm saying?
And so what about we've touched on Cancer, Libra, and now we need to hear what it was like to work with the Tauruses, so we can keep Hillary in there as well.
I'm going to actually say that one was actually one of the least stressful experiences. and I'll tell you why. Because once everybody was clear on what was required and needed, the only glitch in Taurus was there was one piece that was too much of an outlier in tone for the whole series. Mm-hmm. So that it was suggested to the person, this is a really good piece. It doesn't fit into the overall tone of the series. So would you consider writing that as a blog or as a piece in one of the other publications? I mean, you don't give up good material you've written, but it's got to fit.
Yeah.
What I mean, was, that, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that makes sense. I feel like, I actually work with a lot of I'm a Taurus, obviously, but I also work with a lot of Tauruses creatively. And so I feel like if they understand what is needed and the communication is really clear, and, you know, like they feel like they're being collaborative, like they're pretty, I mean, we're pretty steady. Like, you know, it's like, we're not the fastest always, but it's like, you know, we're just like plug along and it's not a lot of ups and downs.
I will say that I may have fudged the deadlines for each book depending upon what I knew about the signs.
Yeah. I mean, I do that regardless of anybody's. I'm like, I'm just going to assume because artists, like, I'm just going to assume that, like, if I say I need it by a week ahead of time, a month ahead of time, whatever, then that way I know that I can bug them at the end and it's not like my ass on the line.
Yeah. But depending upon the sign, I had in my head, okay, I need to pad it a week or pad it 2 weeks, or you know what I'm saying, just to make sure that things were roughly in the right zone. I will say the hardest part for me as an individual is there were times, because each book was, the law was, no book must be more than 5% different than the word count of the average of the series, which is like crazy.
Ugh.
So there were a couple of times where people would send me back their pieces and say, I've been told by the editor that we need to remove words. And by the way, Alicia was awesome through this whole process.
She's wonderful.
But there were times when things were like, okay, send it to me. I will chop out words and then I will send it back to you for approval, because it was easier for me to do some of the chopping sometimes than to them attack it, or to send it to Alicia to do some more lining, marking up. So I ended up doing a lot of shortening for people as well.
What did you find? You've got more astrology experience than pretty much everybody out there, but there must have been something that still surprised you in this journey of creating this book series that's related to astrology. What surprised you?
Besides the strong proof of behaviors in the process of the writers doing their work. Beyond that, I'm going to say that there were several times where there began to be echoes in my life of events that were not typical of my sign, like the month and a half that I was working on. By the way, basically all 12 books were written over a course of about 14 months.
Oh God.
I did about half of each and there was some repetition between volumes, but nonetheless, it's even then it's like I wrote six books in 14 months.
Yeah.
Plus dealing with people. So, but what happened was stuff would manifest in my life that was like, that's atypical. Oh, that's the Gemini thing that's happening to me. So that I was kind of like having a bleed over effect of being so much in the headspace of each individual sign as I was writing and reading and editing and making suggestions or having Zoom meetings with other writers about, because not everybody that wrote was an astrologer. So I had to I was their backup, you know, lifeline. So that because I was so immersed in each of the signs as I moved through them, stuff was happening in my life. It's like, that's not the way it usually plays for me. Oh, I'm experiencing it because it's coming through as a Gemini. It's coming through as a Taurus. It's coming through as an Aquarian, because I was so much in that headspace that like calls to like, so that I was attracting those kinds of experiences and people and things in my life.
And I mean, it's similar when I've heard that a lot with people that create tarot decks. And I know for when I created my tarot deck, I was experiencing those cards as they came to life. So my experiences with the Devil card were quite something. And the Tower was quite something. And the King of Cups kept asking me out on dates. I mean, it was a thing. So, I'm not surprised that that happened. and just knowing you, it's like, hey, we're just going to roll with it and see,
you know. It was an experience.
Yeah. One of the things we've mentioned a lot is that astrology is so deep and so complex. And one of the beautiful things that's come out of the work that we've all done today, whether this morning with SIPA and then with Michael before you and then Evo, all of your work, is it's about astrology not being so afraid of things. And, you know, just say, oh, don't fear the retrograde. People are like, oh, scary about the retrograde, or I'm not going to mess with the Gemini. You know, I'm starting to get some questions in the chat. But before we go to that, what do you think is the biggest misconception that modern people have about astrology?
And it's hard to say anymore because people have so many different sources. But I'm going to say that it is not fatalistic. Astrology is really not about this is what will happen to you. This is what your life is going to be like. This is what your persona is. No, it's really more a collection of tools that makes things possible for you to do more with what you've got. That's part of it. The other bit is that, hey, like I'm wearing contact lenses right now, right? If you know what's in your chart, then you can figure out ways to create creative lenses by activating the portions of the experience that you don't have as much of in your chart. So you can also look at your chart as like, oh, well, I'm going to wear this ring or this amulet, or I'm going to do this ritual, or I'm going to activate those parts of myself. Because as witches, ideally, we're connecting with all the things within ourselves, right? Including the ones that are quiet or latent or soft or spoken. So I'd say there's also a awakening to the idea of I will actively engage with the chart that I was born with, and I will modulate the way things express in the same way that our genetics shape certain parts of our life. But, you know, our lifestyle choices, our mental choices, all the other choices we make completely change how a lot of those play. Well, the same is true with astrology. We just have to take an active role in our own astrology.
So with that, we have a question from one of our participants that said, any impressions on my Libra moon opposing Chiron in Aries? I am a Cancer with Gemini rising.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So for folks that don't know Chiron well, Chiron is a planetoid or asteroid, depending on how you want to define it. And the image of it is the wounded healer. Chiron, so everybody knows in Greek mythology, most of the centaurs are assholes.
They're lovable assholes.
Yeah, most of them are party boys, you know.
Yeah.
Except for a very small number of them. And Chiron is of the little bit more chill, a little bit more mature, and is a teacher to heroes, to gods and goddesses, very wise, gets asked by the gods to make poison arrows to shoot some monsters they couldn't kill. And ends up wounding himself with the arrows he made for the gods and is in pain and has to use all his herbalism to survive. So it's the combination of the things that we are powerful and wise and also broken within us. So wherever Chiron is, there's a lot of power of integration and a lot of power of finding our strengths from both our light and our dark and from the wisdom that comes from brokenness that we all have as well. So the moon in your chart is the part of you that is the narrator of your life. It is the voice that describes your life events to yourself. It's the storyteller that's in your head telling you who you are. So if you've got a Libra moon, that means that that moon is trying to tell your life in a fair and dispassionate way and trying to but here's the problem with that. It examines other people's stuff and doesn't put you number one. All right? And Chiron is on the opposite side, which means there's a tug of war between them. And when there's a tug of war, opposition between planets. So have you ever seen a tug of war where both teams are pulling the rope really hard and the little flag in the middle is barely moving? So it could be standstill, stuck, or maybe it's jiggling a little bit, or maybe it's a little bit more evolved. And think of it like a seesaw, and each of the planets takes turn doing its job, and then it works better. And then the next step of it that's a little bit more refined is let's walk towards the center and meet in the center and find a synthetic and compromise agreement to how we're going to be with each other. But Chiron in Aries wants to take action, and that Libra moon wants to put everybody else on equal footing with you, and you never get number one time, which is very dangerous because you're also a Cancer. And you've got a Gemini rising, which makes it look to human beings like you're more open to talk. You fake extroversion really well. You may even think of yourself as an extrovert, but that Gemini wants to explore it, and it doesn't look very Cancerian, which means when people encounter you at first, they don't understand that you are actually having significant feelings and thoughts about all these things, especially with that Libra moon that's telling you to play nice. So what's the strength in this? When you get it right, Libra moon opposite Chiron makes you the perfect negotiator for the best options for everybody. Cancer with Gemini rising means that you can learn to communicate your feelings and needs better than anybody if you allow that to be what happens. So there's a lot of, you know, there's no such thing as a bad combo. It's a question of figuring out, okay, what do I need to learn to use this well?
That's beautiful. This next question is a really good one too. This year's astrological events make me quite concerned about the American election this year. We talked about that with Teresa Ree at the beginning of the year as well. I'm very interested to see what magical workings you might be doing for this year's election season. I'm planning and doing the mundane things, the voting, I'm assuming that's what they're talking about, but curious about other things I can do to boost. And I'm sure that people listening in different parts of the world,
are gonna do
there's a lot of different elections and political stuff happening this year that would, you know.
There's a lot of, I mean, you'll see globally that there is a lot of backsliding into power going to whoever's got the loudest, crankiest voice. The bigger the bully you are, the more likely it is that you'll get a following. It's just unfortunate, but that's sometimes what happens when the world is crazier. So I'm going to say, on a magical level, in addition to direct action of a political sort, people make better choices when they feel more stable and solid. So as something I used to do regularly, when I used to go to city council meetings or county council or other sorts of events, is I would sit there at events and I would do, when I wasn't signed up to speak or something, I would spend the time cleaning the energy in the room and grounding the space, because the more stuff built up in the room, the less civil and the less sane people were going to be around me. And I don't think that is unethical, because I'm not trying to impose my thoughts on anybody else. I'm just trying to make the air a little bit crisper and clearer so that everybody can function. I will say, that I am intentionally going to make use of the fact that in May, I mentioned it in the earlier class today, we've got Mercury, Venus, Uranus, Sun, Jupiter, lined up in Taurus. And I'm going to take some of that nice, solid, grounded Taurus energy, because we're going to store it up for the rest of the year, because we're going to need it. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to say something on the, I won't say dirty tricks side, but I will say this. So there is, there's a conjunction of the elephant tribe, AKA the GOP, happening in July.
Those of you who are not Yanks, it's the Republicans.
It's the Republicans. The Republicans. The Grand Old Party, which, you know, even the name sounds...
Even for me a second, I was like, the elephant. I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yep.
But even so
I like
that. Even GOP, Grand Old Party, has like a weird sound in my ears. But guess what's happening? During their convention, Mars will be conjuncting Uranus in Taurus.
So, and anus is showing, I guess.
Well, I mean, I would not put it beyond some of the current people in office, but be that as it may, I clearly have a particular opinion when it comes to politics. But Mars conjunct Uranus, man, that's two of the most explosive planets. You have Mars that likes to just take action, and Uranus that is of the lightning bolt striking the earth, iconoclastic, burn it all down kind of thing. And when you blend the two of them together during an event such as that, especially in an earth sign, which means it'll show up as solid things, as manifest things, I think that there's going to be a lot of unrest at their conference, at their convention, whether or not that is in their own, amongst themselves, or in the protesters on the outside. But I'd watch that carefully, and I would save up some of that yummy Mars and Uranus and Sun and Jupiter stuff from the May 15th through 20th is the best time for it, collecting that energy. But do some work then for stability. But also, some of that could be applied during that event as well.
So a question that I have, because your talk before this, we were talking about eclipses, and that you mentioned that creating eclipse water is destroying a good things. Pardon?
For destroying things.
For destroying things. Now, if somebody was trying to use that in political magic, yay, nay, what is your thought? Because I've got a feeling somebody's going to be listening thinking, ooh, I could do that. And to me, that seems kind of
iffy.
Iffy, yeah.
So here's the problem. Here's the problem when you're talking about political magic. even though we, at the moment, most people are thinking in terms of specific personalities or specific individuals, whether that be on the local or regional or national stage, I'm an honest believer that if you remove one person, somebody of that ilk, equally yucky, will pop up and fill the slot. It's not like there's not, so that even though they may not be immediately as effective in some regards in terms of their charismatic pull on people, I think that we're in a place where the tides of history are shaping things so that if you try to work to remove one of the players off the board, then suddenly one of the pawns may become a king.
Yeah, so I think it's a fallacy to hope that if you destroy something, that it's going to be replaced with something good.
No,
it's going to be replaced, but you have no idea what's actually going to replace it.
And the person who takes the role would then also be anointed by the martyrdom of the person who just got taken off. So I don't recommend that. However, what if people are preventing people from getting to polling places, either directly or indirectly through doing work in legislative efforts to disenfranchise people, right? So I try to focus on systemic stuff. Since it happened last election cycle, I can talk about a working that some friends and I did. That was actually quite a project. There was a lovely postcard thanking the poll workers for doing what they do in the polling places. And it had a bunch of sigils and magic charged on it. And we had these charged postcards and they were charged with the following. May the poll workers may be protected. May the ballots be protected, yada, yada. And those got sent to like 80% of all the polling places in the United States. And they were pretty, which meant that people might hang on to them. And there was nothing offensive about them. It was all pretty words on it. And actually, none of the energy was negative. So nobody would get a vibe off of it. So my point is, figure, just like I was saying earlier today in the class about figure out how to work with the energy that's available, figure out how to work around reactions and figure how to work around defenses, which means, well, and let me give you another example. What happens if somebody gives an oath and then breaks it? Are there not divine beings who are specifically tasked with looking at that?
Yeah, it's like snapping the string on the violin. You could take your eye out.
Well, you know, if rather than you trying to take somebody out, just like I was saying, eclipses are big, which is why if I'm going to do anything with an eclipse, I'm asking for some powerful, expansive divine being to be involved in the process. Then if somebody is clearly in violation of the oath of office that they made, and that doesn't just apply to politicians. It applies to people who take jobs in different kinds of social welfare settings, et cetera, right? And therapists. Anyway, there's lots of oaths or codes of ethics people have. Then I'm going to ask I just want to put in a little note. Could you look over there and see what's going on with that person? Because as far as I can tell, they may have violated their oath. Is that something that you want to do something about? And it leaves it to them to decide. All I'm saying is, if you're going to do political magic in a year where the astrology is really powerful and really fraught, then rely on beings that have a broader perspective than if all of us got together and spent an entire year planning and speaking of all the pros and cons of any approach, it would still not match what probably some divine being can do in a couple of glances. So I'm going to say, work with what you got and pass it on to those. But oath breaking is a legit thing to call them down on.
So it's just paying attention to, yep, that's, I think that's fair because there's a lot of, we're seeing that in a lot of places.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're lying in your confirmation as a Supreme Court judge.
Yeah. That's also, I mean, there are literally in very many cases using their own religious relics. That's not going to go well with some of these beings out there.
Anyway, but the point is, you can do things if you want to, but this is a really intense year, guys. I mean, it really is an intense year. Energetically, even if we didn't have an election, this is an intense year.
I hear that. So we have another question that says, do you have suggestions for using astrology with shadow work? A lot of today, meaning the classes we took today, have been telling me that this is something I need to do. What are your thoughts?
Sure. And I'm gonna point out the first place I would start. And here's the thing: you will if you do a scan of literature online or flip through books, you will find 12 dozen approaches for how to do shadow work or karmic work or whatever language the person used for all this kind of stuff. And they're all sort of right. But I'll tell you what I'm going to suggest, and then I'll tell you why you have to think it through. So if you look at your birth chart and you go to the very bottom of the chart, the nadir, and the fourth house in particular, but whatever's going on at the bottom of your chart, that shows you your home, your roots, where you came from, and even something about your genetics. And I'm pretty sure that there's something that lives in that part of your chart that has some clues about working with things that are part of your so-called shadow. And shadow is not all bad, but it tends to be pushed to the side or nonverbal. Here's the other thing. Find where Saturn is in your chart. My first teacher of astrology said that wherever Saturn is in the house, in the chart, somebody's chart by sign and house, is where somebody goes, ouch, if you press on it. So,
and, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
And I'm so, fine. I mean, maybe it's even would be helpful for us just to take a couple minutes and break down what does shadow work even mean? Right. Because people talk about it, and I'm not sure that we all have the same idea of what shadow work is. I know for me, it's about work, like whether it's healing or looking at things in myself that I'm afraid to look at, that are uncomfortable to look at, and whether that's making peace with them or bringing them into the light. It doesn't mean that these things have to be shed or gotten rid of, but it's about retooling them. You know, for one thing that I know with my own shadow work, my words make people feel something. And so I could use my words to help people, or I could use my words the way I've used them on a number of exes and leave them limping as they walk off into the sunset. So to me, it wasn't like, I got to get rid of that part of myself, but it's more like, this is a thing that I have. What can I do with it? But Eva, what do you think shadow work is?
Well, it's that, but and more. Like as a for example, one of the ones that people don't think of as shadow work, but it absolutely is. And the more you look at it, the more you find. By the way, shadow work is never ending. And I always like to say, you know, the taller the tree, the deeper the roots. And Ursula K. Le Guin said, the brighter the light, the deeper the shadow. And if you continue to grow and evolve as a human being, then your bright parts get brighter and your dark parts get darker, and that's okay. But here's a dark part that many people I know have, but they don't think of it as dark or shadow. Relationship to physicality, your body, your movement through time as you age, things related to self-image, disassociation from bodily sensations. I mean, everything that is nonverbal is also in the realm of the shadow, and your body for the most part is nonverbal, except for the part that you think is the biggest part of you, which it ain't. So any kind of work that you do that is about becoming more comfortable in this vehicle of incarnation, in this body, and embracing its limits and its strengths and its shape, whatever that may be, is also part of shadow work. I have a really, this is headcanon for me, so it need not apply to anybody else. But I think that the reason the self-help groups work, 12-step meetings or support groups of any kind, is that you get together a bunch of people, and when they project their shadows and their crap on other people, there are enough points where they actually have similar life experience that it maps well enough that it gives the illusion of real dialogue, until the person has then actually become aware of their own shadow enough, and then they can actually start meeting the other person as the person, and they're not don't need to project it to see it. But I think that the other piece where we can begin shadow work every day is, like, I pay attention because shadow work is also the thing that reveals implicit bias. The things that when we catch ourselves being casually sexist, racist, homophobic, anything, it's a piece of our collective shadow that for a moment has now gotten visible to us. And a lot of times we back off, because the other problem with shadow work is people get confused because there's like, I'm a good person, which also is a big roadblock against actually doing the shadow work, because shadow work requires reveling in the ambivalence and not getting settled.
And also, I'm going to add to that, like, I'm a good person. And then some, that I feel like the next thing to work through is I'm a terrible person because I do. It's like neither one of those is effective. No. And it's, you know, what I always say to people is, well, you're a human person. You know, you got to keep stepping along and you're going to make mistakes. You're not going to get to a place where you're, you know, but it's like, it's the same. We talk about collective shadow. I think of it in the one of the ways that it manifests is like an injustice. And there's the sense of people thinking, I'm going to get rid of injustice in my lifetime, or if I can't get rid of injustice in my lifetime, then what's the point? And to me, it's like injustice is like physical illness. There's going to continue to be diseases. Maybe there will be a point in human history when we get to either physically evolve or technologically evolve, when we can eradicate all diseases. But that is a far, far journey for us. But if we don't address the diseases,
right,
they will kill us. The same thing with the injustice. If we don't address the injustice, then it kills us as a society. Well,
let's add another magical layer to that, because no human being is an island, right? We are all
even Kanani, as much as she thinks she is. Not even Kanani.
I've tried my damnedest to be an island.
She tries real, just tries real fucking out. Hard.
If
we ignore all that water or push it aside, the island still is connected to the land that everybody else is on. But be that as it may. So, but as magical folks, there's another thing going on. So let's say everybody's probably heard of the idea of group minds or thought forms. Yes.
People. Yes. It's like when, for those who aren't as familiar, it's when there's enough of a belief or there's enough energy put to something that it actually, the thing becomes cognizant.
Think of it as unplanned, unintended, collectively created servitor, which is a scary, scary idea.
Yes.
So there is a thing floating out in the ethers that is sexism, racism, anti-Semitism, homophobia, transphobia, age, all the things, right? So let's say that you're like working, just and it's hard enough as it is, just on the level of the individual being embedded in a society that's got a variety of issues, yada yada. But then also floating in the environment around you, there is the group think, the group thought process, group mind, are unnaturally emerged out of itself. Server thing that is saying, and I'm the little thing whispering in your ear that is pushing you back into whatever the thing that you're trying to escape is. It's hard because you can't ever actually get until the whole society is. It's kind of like, we got close, but measles is coming back because some unfortunate people made the wrong choices about not getting vaccinated against measles, and smallpox is on its way. Yada yada. Well, the thing is, you can actually sort of get rid of a collective ill if enough people are vaccinated against it. Well, we don't have that yet when it comes to the group minds reinfecting us, so that it's vigilance, it's constant vigilance, and that's true for all shadow work. It's self-observation, and then I can't remember the way Terry Pratchett put it, but it's having first thoughts and second thoughts and third thoughts and fourth thoughts about everything, so that you have a properly examined selfhood.
So with that, we're going to take a sponsor break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about astrology. And there's a lot of great questions in the chat. We're going to keep going.
Hey, witches, our beloved kitchen witch, Dawn Hunt of Kachina Aurora, is back, and she has all kinds of new delicious magic, and we are here for it.
My husband turns 50 this year, and if I gave him a case of Kachina Aurora's magical marinara as a milestone birthday present, he would not complain, especially now that Kachina Aurora has magical marinara sauces, roasted garlic pomodoro, and sweet basil pomodoro.
Yes, those are so
incredible, and with months of cold, rainy weather still ahead of us, I'm all about warm, tasty, super easy meals to make, which is why I absolutely love Cucina Aurora's risottos. Just listen to these flavors. Garlic and Italian herb, hearty mushroom, garden vegetable. They're delicious and super simple to make and perfect for a cozy winter meal.
Not to mention the coffees. She has whole bean moon coffees. The full moon is a light roast. The half moon is a medium roast. And the dark moon is a dark roast. It is all amazing and exactly what you need to start your day.
We have so many coffee witches that are so hooked on these blends. I mean, they're just, not only do they have these wonderful names and qualities, they're legitimately delicious coffees, but literally everything Cucina Aurora makes is incredible. And if you haven't gotten it yet, you have to check out A Kitchen Witch's Guide to Recipes of Love and Romance and Kitchen Witchcraft for Beginners, Spells, Recipes, and Rituals to bring your own practice into the kitchen. The recipes are glorious and they're really easy to make and they are so magical.
Whether you want to try the famous infused olive oil, the scrumptious risotto, or literally anything Dawn creates, go to KatrinaAurora.com ASAP and use code WITCHLIFE to get 10% off. That's code WITCHLIFE.
Thank you to Cucina Aurora for being an episode sponsor.
We cannot tell you how many witches have gotten hooked on jasmine pearl tea.
Well, it's friggin' delicious.
And you Jasmine Pearl fans, they have a whole array of absolutely phenomenal winter teas to keep you warm and comforted through these next few cold and miserable months.
Like their Golden Fire Tea, every sip of that tea is an adventure. The turmeric brings warmth and grounding that combines with a zesty kick of ginger and cayenne to create a glow of flavors that dance on your tongue. More than just the taste, Golden Fire heals you from within. It's perfect for those wintry days when you need a bit of warmth, and you can even try it as a latte.
And let's talk wellness. This tea isn't just a delight to the senses, it's a guardian for your well-being, especially during cold and flu season. It feels like a nurturing shield, fortifying and protecting.
A tea that has become a personal favorite of mine, especially during these challenging times, is the Well-Being Blend. It's not just any tea. It's like a comforting friend, offering support when you need it most. Imagine a blend of elderberries, echinacea, red clover, and rose hips. Each sip feels like it's boosting your immune system. Perfect for those days when you feel a bit off or have been around others or under the weather yourself. And the peppermint in this tea, it's incredibly refreshing, especially if you're feeling stuffed up.
Hold on, let me bring you a sip of serenity. A moment of tranquility, will we? Courtesy of Jasmine Pearl's exquisite Tranquility Green Tea. Close your eyes and envision lush Chinese tea gardens where each leaf whispers the secrets of centuries-old traditions. This isn't just a tea. It's an invitation to embark on a journey of peace and harmony. Breathe in the essence of this carefully cultivated leaf. A sip can take you on a sensory journey that transports you to a place of calm, where time slows down and every moment is savored. Disclaimer, Tranquility Green Tea experiences may include a heightened sense of inner calm, a peaceful disposition, and a newfound appreciation for the artistry of Chinese green tea.
Supporting small businesses are very important to us, and the Jasmine Pearl is a family-owned tea importer and specialty tea blender, which is based in Portland, Oregon, and they have been crafting tea blends for 17 years and direct sourcing teas from origin since 2004. Their blending and sourcing philosophy is based in the love of fine teas and herbs, which is why they focus on blending with exceptional ingredients, hand blending each batch using mainly organic ingredients, and wow, does it show.
Check out these phenomenal teas at thejasminepearl.com. Save 10% with the new coupon code WITCH2024. That's WITCH2024. Free shipping on orders over $35. Make sure you let them know you heard about them on That Witch Life podcast. And thank you to Jasmine Pearl for being an episode sponsor. So we've got another question in the chat here that says, I've been working with Greek deities lately, and I'm finding that the way I communicate with them is astrology-centered, attributing the planets and signs with them. I've been going back and forth if this is an accurate way to communicate. I mean, my response is, yeah, because we've assigned them already. But what do you think, Ivo?
So I'm going to say, of course it works, because there's a bunch of other individuals that have walked that road before, and it's a well-carved path of people seeing, Mercury as Mercury, Venus as Venus, et cetera, et cetera. So that's there. But also, there are plenty of other, but if you don't work with the Greek or Hellenistic things, there's plenty of other cultures that have also worked with those planets as beings, right? So that depending on who you are, you may choose a different pantheon, or I'm going to say, and, or take another step back and say to yourself, each of the signs and each of the planets is also the summation of those things. So you'll find that you can tune into the part of Mercury that is commerce versus the part, I'm going to use that as an example, the part of Mercury that's communication, the part of Mercury that's a psychopomp, right? So that you can kind of like, how about this? In the same way that many societies use epithets, those tag-on names to gods and goddesses that add additional description about their jobs or their particular functions, you can call upon the planets and use the interface of those divine beings, but you can also narrow it down to the flavor of them or the piece of them that you're working on in that moment as well. But there's nothing wrong with doing that, and there's nothing wrong with doing it using any number of other mythologies and systems.
Right, and I think especially what is so true is that these planets all have Roman names, which have very strong ancient Greek correlations, mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they're already doing it. I mean,
whether or not you think about it,
it makes perfect sense. And
so I'll throw a weird thing in there that is actually that I noticed once upon a time when I was a young pup astrologer. Thinking about religions. So this is not true of all religions, but you know, some religions have a day of the week that is their special day, right?
Yes.
Okay. So Christianity picks Sundays, right? And if you're Jewish, it's Saturday.
Correct.
If you're Muslim, it's Friday.
Okay.
Okay. So Friday is actually the Venus day. And the first thing that I think of is the symbol of a crescent moon with that bright Venus.
Beautiful. Yes. There must be something.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Some kind of deep tie there. I would not know. Please do not quote me, y'all.
No. And it doesn't. But the point is that I also think that, and if you think about it, and this is a different way of thinking about the big three of modern monotheism, because they're not the only monotheist in the world. They're just like the big three, right? But it tells you something about them in that in Judaism, it's all about debate. It's all about the laws and all about discussing. And the structures, and that's Saturn.
Yes, and having to figure out there's a woman I follow on Instagram where she's an Orthodox Jewish woman. She talks about her life, and there's all these rules, and she's got to consult with the rabbi about this and that, so they can interpretation. Yes. Right. I really love that about religion. That there's like, well, we have room to argue, we have room to interpret. Oh. It's not just like don't question. You know, it's like, it's all about questioning.
It is. There's lots. And Sunday for the sun and the rising sun and resurrection. Yeah. But here's the one where I'm going to throw this in, especially because of the state of the world right now. Ultimately, Islam is Venus based. It's about beauty. It's about harmony. In its purest expression, it's about beauty and harmony. And it's in the same way that in its purest expression, Judaism is about rationality and dialogue and debating and coming things. And, you know, Christianity in its purest expression is about that sun energy. The sun continues to rise every day. It sets, but it rises again. So I don't think any of those religions picked that, but I think it's an interesting example of astrology, just kind of like slowly weaving its way through history in different ways that, so that you begin to see astrology everywhere once you begin to incorporate the ideas from it. Anyway.
It's a great answer.
I love that. It's so beautiful.
Really insightful. It's something that I never really thought about. You know, it's like it's like something that never even occurred to me, but listening to you say that, I'm like, it's so, and thinking about how what those energies mean or how they correlate, it makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. It really does.
Hey, religions, get back to that, please. Get back to that, please. Come back to that. Bomb big three. Come
all
on.
All human beings everywhere, if they would get to
the core of it. Yeah.
Whatever that may be for you.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
So On that note, there's a question I think that correlates. So looking outside of the U.S., there's a lot of awful shit going on as well. Any magical advice for dealing with the grief, overwhelm, and or hopelessness we may be taking in as we see world events unfold, aside from regular self-care, work, and therapy?
Yeah, I saw that question. Yeah. That was exciting because I also, it's like, what do we do? You know what to do other than be informed and inform others. But if there's, I would love to hear what we can do both for us others that are being affected.
I'm going to start really mundane and then I'm going to go magical. So as a, for example, I've been giving money pretty regularly to Doctors Without Borders because
we did that.
It's so very, very, very needed.
It's so, so very, very needed. There's also a group called, Rainbow Railroad that I've been giving money to that are doing important things like getting people out of war zones whose passports no longer match what they look like.
Uh-huh.
There's and food. I've been intentionally buying things from Ukrainian crafters on Etsy that I know are actually in Ukraine. So my point is, you can do physical things of putting money where you can help in that way. Not everybody has as much money, but it's one way to express it. But the other thing is, if possible, and if you were called to do it, but you've got to be really clean about these things, is all these places where trouble is happening, there are land spirits and there are also ancestral spirits. So perhaps you're going to do some psychopomp work for those that are dying right now. Perhaps you're going to call upon ancestors if you have ancestors from that part of the world. Perhaps you're going to, I've done map work. Do you know what I mean by that? Where you get a map of an area and you basically try to use that as a way of envisioning connecting to that space. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pain. It's a small thing, and it's not going to change the world overnight, but we know we can call upon the ancestors, the gods and goddesses of the local peoples of all those places to help clean up the energy of the space as much as possible so they might have better opportunity. And ultimately, I'm going to say hope is simply the belief that change is possible. And as long as change is possible, then eventually you can turn things around. So, but in a very large sense of the word right now, a lot of it is simply choosing to believe that your small actions, if enough of us act, have some impact on a mundane level, on a spiritual level, and if you have the opportunity to use your political power as well. But truthfully, let's get real. It took a long time to get to the place we are right now. There are no quick solutions that are going to fix anything.
Yeah.
So we should be prepared.
I also think
this is a long slog.
I also think it's really important to remind yourself that sometimes you have to tap out because we're not built to know everything that we know.
Right.
Right. Like, we're not built as a species to know of every disaster that is happening all across the world is happening.
True. Good
to experience this level of grief and trauma and toxicity. And we weren't built for this. Right. So you're now having to process and understand and in a roundabout way, be a part of trauma on epic, epic levels that we're not built for. So sometimes I feel like, and I've had to do that myself a lot, I struggle a lot with the wanting to know what's going on between that and becoming consumed.
Yeah.
To where I'm all consumed and I'm not in the now anymore. And I'm just devastated over things that are happening in other parts of the country or our world that I can't control. And I'm limited to what I can do. And there's other things, right, that are more close that maybe I could help and I can control. So it's giving yourself that grace and that balance and understand that it's okay to be completely overwhelmed by these things because we weren't built for this.
Oh, I agree. I completely agree. So is the term horizontal hostility one that you've heard before?
I have not heard that, but I want to hear more.
It's probably because, you know, I'm the old fart on the channel tonight. So it was a popular term in the 80s. Let's say that things are crappy, like they are now, And you don't want to punch down because it's a bad thing to punch those that are below you. And you can't really punch up because it's not going to do a lot. So your frustration, your anger gets, you punch the people that are at the same level or next to you. So horizontal hostility, instead of down or up, it's to those that are in the same boat, roughly speaking, that you are. And that we have to be mindful. And I'll give you an example, and it kind of ties into what we've been talking about, is that, you know, one of the things that I use as a kind of mantra to make peace is that, in addition to people only have so many spoons and so much energy available to do the things and to cope with trauma. But beyond that, everybody is called to do different work. So for example, if I want to, I can't work in every activism and every issue. And some people are called to work primarily within one or two or three issues. And if that's the good that they're offering the world, I am happy that they're doing it. And I'm not going to be mad at them for not signing up to work on the issue that I think is more important. It's more important to me. So that there's this horizontal hostility thing of, if somebody's doing something, you do not yell at them for not doing all the things, and you don't yell at them for dropping their things to do what you think is more important.
Oh God, that's so critical.
Yeah, right. Especially now.
It's right now. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I think it's so true. I think sometimes when we get in, when we experience really, really intensity like this, and it is mind-bogglingly intense, you know, it's so easy to start being like, you're not doing it right, and you're not doing it right, and you're not going to do this. And like, suddenly it's like all the people that we really need to be working together with are fighting. And then it's like, what the fuck, yep. You know? And it's, you know, it's like that, you know, I talk a lot in community spaces about the importance of like understanding that there's like many, many, many ways to show up, and none of them are the only way. And if we don't have, I think, a diversity in what that looks like, then actually we're fucking ourselves. We need all of those spaces to be filled. We need all of those approaches to be taken, because all of those voids need to be filled. We can't ignore one thing because we think it has to be this way. And it's just about showing up, whatever that looks like, you know? And I think if we can remember that, we'll get further together.
And this is probably going to be the most love and lighty that you're ever going to hear me, y'all. So I want everyone just to gather their faculties.
I'm taking a breath.
I'm starting to get a hot flash just hearing that.
You know, if there is such a thing as horizontal hostility, there's also such a thing as horizontal kindness and peace. Yes.
100%.
And if we believe in the butterfly effect, right? Which means that a butterfly flaps its wings on one continent and the reverberations create a thunderstorm on another, or cause rain to fall somewhere else. Then we can believe that by consciously doing kind things, or consciously creating space of hope and peace in our environment, because that is one thing we do have control over, that will ripple out and that will reverberate. And it's so easy for us to go, well, me getting groceries for my neighbor, how does that help the people in Palestine? Well, we don't know how it does, but maybe it does. You know, and as witches, we need to be able to believe in that possibility. So it's like, I can't go and get food to the people in Gaza, but I can run to the store for my elderly neighbor. So that's what I'm doing.
And maybe someone hears that story and the elderly neighbor says, hey, this person just did this thing for me. And then someone thinks, oh, that's a really nice thing. You know what? I could do this for this other person I know. And then all of a sudden these good deeds are happening because you've created this ripple effect of just one kind gesture. Absolutely. Things like that can travel all over the world.
Worst case scenario, if
you just did something nice.
You still did something nice. You still did something good for somebody, and maybe it doesn't ripple, but you did something good.
But the thing is even if something doesn't, even if like buying groceries for your neighbor doesn't directly affect something that's happening outside of your immediate world, right? Doesn't mean that, I mean, if we neglect ourselves at the same time, then we're like fucking everything up, because we have to balance both, right? We have to make sure we're taking care of ourselves and maintaining energy to give, to make sure that we take care of others, both in our own communities and in communities that are outside of ours. Because the thing is like, if we're like, I mean, it's true. And I think in activist communities, it's talked about very frequently, which is like, you can't, like, if you drain yourself and you don't take care of yourself and you don't take care of each other and you don't make time to, you know, to decompress and rest, then you won't have anything for a fight. And like, there's a lot of fights that have to happen coming up, both here and in the world. And we have to stand up. And if we forget to be kind to one another, like, what the fuck are we going to do? If we forget to help people that need help and help ourselves, like, we will have nothing left to help other people. So like, even if it's not like, yeah, getting your groceries doesn't mean someone can't get food right now in Palestine suddenly magically poof has food, but it does mean that helping other people in our own communities while simultaneously helping people outside of our communities, we're able to maintain that balance better and we're able to progress further faster. And when we care for ourselves, we can care for others better.
And on a more, all right, it's okay. And now here comes my Scorpio moon to ruin everything. So, and it also prepares us, solidifies our own community in the event that horizontal hostility comes this way. You know, We need to be solidifying our communities by individualizing ourselves and siloing ourselves. We make ourselves so vulnerable. We need to be able to build our networks now. Okay, Scorpio moon out.
100%.
I will say that if you also that, and this is also from the early days of AIDS, HIV back in the late 80s, I'm going to say early 90s. And I was a executive director of an AIDS group at the time. And I was very glad. And I mean, I did some civil disobedience and stuff that got me in trouble, but for the most part, that's not what I was doing. And I was like really happy whenever there were the really over the top, over crazy ACT UP kind of protests, because I actually had a conversation with more than one politician of, would you rather talk to me or would you rather talk to ACT UP? Their eyes would get really big.
They were like, oh shit, you.
I'd rather talk to you.
Yeah.
You seem nice.
And I was, well, and I was also wearing a suit and tie and looking like they're
wore the costume.
Part, like,
wore the costume.
I was wearing the proper camo for that setting.
A good word for that.
It is. But the thing is, when you look at people that are doing different kinds of action, and some of them maybe things like you don't like or don't approve of, or you're like, oh, they're putting our movement back because yada, yada, yada. And yet, these are all different forces affecting the field of where things end up. And it takes an ecology of action to make it work. And people are going to move to the niche that makes sense for them.
Yeah, and the thing is like, If that's not for you, it's okay. You don't have to be the person that's out in a protest. You can be the person that's calling your representatives or that's talking to people within your community. I mean, there's just so many different ways. So it's like okay to also not understand that without crapping on other people and their approach.
Right. And there's one thing when we were looking at myths of the Morgan, a lot of times the kind of the popular image of the Morgan is that she's out there and she's fighting with a sword and but when you read the mythology, she doesn't really engage in direct conflict. There's one area that maybe she did, but for the most part, she's a strategist and she's a person who has the information and she's the person who can cross the borders between this world and the next. Right. And so there's a lot of, so people are like, oh, she's this warrior. And I'm like, is she?
No, it's
or but it's the kind of warrior that you don't think, or she's a kind of warrior that isn't as perhaps as glamorous as you would imagine. She's using her words and she's communicating, and she's developing partnerships is what she does.
And also not being willing to see, I mean, like saying that there's only one way is also terribly ableist. Like, you know what I mean? It's like people, you have to allow people to show up in ways that they know is okay for them too. And that, and understanding that their judgment call on that is the right judgment call, you know? So it's like, but I agree, you know, when I was living in Oakland during some of the Black Lives Matter protests, you know, I had friends who, it was like groups of us that were out and groups of us that were in the back being like, don't go this way, actually go down this route. Watch out. There's a problem over here. Yep. Is everyone safe? We've lost someone. Where did they go? So-and-so got arrested. Can someone meet them at the courthouse? Like
that jail support,
if we
big thing.
Didn't have that, it would have been a shit show. Like the people that thought things through to tell us what to do ahead of time and were like in the background while people were on the ground was the only way that people were kept safe in that situation. So, and then people like bringing food to the organizers and helping so that like everyone was taken care of. I mean, that and providing medical assistance, all of it, like all of those pieces were critical.
So we have one more question before we wrap up today. So I think this is a great way to wrap up. Somebody said, advice on how to get ready for the intense energy this year.
Well, some of you already are doing it, I hope. I mean, hopefully you are engaging in some kind of self-care that involves meditation and energy work. Hopefully you are sprucing up your lovely shields so that when you're out in the world, hopefully you are doing some kind of warding to make your house feel good. Please note, make your house feel good. Warding is a home is or your office as well, is not just about keeping the ouchy, ugly, bugly, nasty things out. It's about encouraging a healthy, warm, supportive energy in the home. So that alone gets you a long ways. And then frankly, do regular cleansing work, because the more people are going through stuff, the more emotional and psychic debris there is in the world to cling to you that you then have to, you know, get off. So if you're not a big believer in purification baths, then consider a purification shower and just tone and move energy through your body. But cleanse, ward, shield, meditate, do magic. Remember that you have magic. A lot of times we develop tunnel vision and forget that we have more capacity to alter the odds in our favor as magical people. And be practical. Don't try to save. It's kind of like when I do weather magic. I try to do just enough so that, hey, can the winds just knock off a little bit around our house so that the trees don't fall on us? You know, you do the amount that is reasonable for you to work on that actually causes an effect. I think that's about all the advice I can say. And also that body surf it. Don't fight it. When you feel like there's big waves of energy moving through society, pay attention, experience it, let it pass through and let it go.
Oh, that explains a dream I had last night. I had one of those dreams where like these giant waves and I used to, when I go to Myrtle Beach, I would boogie bird or not here in the Pacific, because she'll destroy you. Myrtle Beach, yes. So, you know, this the part of the Atlantic is a little further down the American coast. But, you know, and then the big waves come and you just dive under them. And I had this dream last night, this big old wave was coming up that kind of looked like the waves in the Barbie movie that Ken ran into injured himself. And I just remember looking at my husband in the dream and going, oh God, I hate those. I hate those ones. And I was like, here we go. So.
I had a similar dream recently, except it was a disturbing moving clump of darkness in the sky. And as it got closer and closer, it was a large number of very loud, very angry birds that just became bigger and bigger and louder, filling the sky. And then I just was quiet and eventually they passed and receded into the distance.
Sorry, your nephew pup was about to have dinner out of the cat box.
I thought he was about to howl.
He's
walking away like, fine,
I won't eat the cat poop.
Oh, it's like the end of the day, Riley keeps jumping up here and she's like, hi, excuse me. Can you just 5 more minutes, friends, 5 minutes.
So, but if you want dates for when to hang on to, I'm going to say U.S. has its Uranus returns July 26th of 2027, November 5th of 2027, and May 11th of 2028. Uranus return is basically a possibility for renewal, transformation, return to different ideals. Now, whether that's good or bad is up to us to decide, but I'm saying it's not till 2027, 2028 that the time is ripe for making the big changes, at least for this country. And, you know, the broader the prediction, the less useful it becomes. So I can't say about the whole world, but for this country, those are the years where it matters.
Yeah, we got quite a road ahead of us here. So,
yes.
We do.
Well, Ivo, just as always, thank you so much
for being
with us and you're sharing your wisdom and knowledge and just offering such a beautiful class. Those of y'all who were not able to attend the MiniCon this year, we missed you and you missed out. this was very special. Okay, so you've got a lot of conferences coming up. You're going to be in Florida. Yep. Where can people see you?
You know, look for me in Orlando at Summer Magic Festival. Look for me at Earth House in Wisconsin. Look at me going to Mystic South, where I'll hopefully see you guys.
Yes.
Oh my God. We're so excited.
It'll be a lot of fun. And I'm going to be, and honestly, just look me up on my website, evodominguezjr.com. I put there where I'm going to be teaching at events. There's currently no online classes I'm doing on my own because I actually have to do stuff. I've got a ton of initiations and coven things going up, so my schedule's full. And I may be working on two additional writing projects because I'm a madman.
Woohoo! Love it.
You're like, I'm a crazy man.
I'm going to get so excited now as we're talking to people. We're starting to hear people go, oh, we're going to be at Mystic South. And we're like, we get so excited because we can start seeing people in person.
Evo and Morgan and Tempest. It's going to be a really great time. Really, yes. Good. Yes. And then, of course, our buddy Nathan Hall. And it's going to be great. So, all right. Well, everybody have a wonderful night. Your recordings will be in your inboxes by Monday. So give us until Monday. If you don't see them until Monday, and you'll see them by Tuesday, then you can reach out. But Give us until Monday.
Like 45 times.
Monday. And the playlist will be available to you on Monday.
It won't be available tomorrow because tomorrow is not Monday.
Monday.
Is that what you said?
Monday.
That's what I heard. Don't listen to Kanani. She has bad advice.
All right. Okay, friends, we're going to wrap. I'm going to put the playlist back on as the music's going to go until 7. And thank you all so much for supporting us and being here. And thank you so much to Evo. This has just been a beautiful day. Oh, Evo,
thank you so much. Big hugs.
Can't wait to see you.
Thank you for listening to That Witch Life podcast. Our music is by Dustin Schultz, editing by Corey Drake. If you like what we do, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee or check out our merch on our Etsy store or join us on Patreon for bonus content, ad-free episodes, or to join our Witch Squad. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For show notes, audio transcript, or to ask us a question to answer on a future episode, go to thatwitchlife.com. Until then, keep moting that shit. We will talk to you next week.
So mote it be.